Max Planck said that insight must precede application. This position is fundamental to research universities all over the world. Today, Made in Science, the official podcast of the University of Stuttgart, wants to find out how soft materials and soft robotics regard to this particular ideal of research here at our university. The guest in our podcast today is Junior Professor Dr. Annika Pahl from the Institute of Applied Mechanics. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to having an interesting conversation.
First, congratulations. You have recently gained 1.5 million euro funding through the Emmy-Noether program of the Deutsche Forschungsgemeinschaft, DFG, the German Research Foundation. That is excellent.
Thank you. I was quite happy with the results, and I'm sure that this would really be a stepping stone or a real push forward for the research that we do in my group.
And for those who don't know the Emmy-Noether program, it is a very prestigious program that gives early career researchers the chance to qualify for the post of professor at a university by leading an independent junior research group for a period of 6 years. And mind you, only about 20% of applicants are succeeding. And you are one of them. Receiving the award, you said that, quote, it will be instrumental in establishing new capabilities and pushing forward the boundaries of soft robotics research group in our work. The next 6 years at the Universität Stuttgart promise to be very exciting, unquote. Why? Why will these be an exciting period of 6 years for you and your group?
This funding will essentially allow us to firstly build capabilities and secondly do what we have wanted to do for quite some time now. We do experimental science, and that requires instruments, resources, and above all, willing hands to do those experiments. And this grant would be ideal for bringing together all the necessities in order that we need to push forward soft robotic research in our group.
You have described your research vision and that of your group as intelligence by design, embedding intelligence in physical structure of soft machines. So for me, this leads to a couple of questions, really. There are key words like intelligence, machines, soft machines, physical structure. I wonder how all of that is related, and perhaps we can start to sort it out first by looking at soft machines. In your understanding, in your research, what are soft machines?
This is a quite recent development in science, that we are starting to make functional machines that serve a purpose, or that do something by using completely soft materials. And when I say soft, physically soft, like polymers, rubbers. And this introduces a completely new paradigm, because so far what we are accustomed to is having rigid motors and gears and pulleys, and these come together to build very complex machines. But what we are now trying to do is kind of set up a parallel way to perform complementary functions where we are not dependent on these rigid mechanisms, but we use soft materials. And yeah, that's essentially what soft machines are.
And just towards the end, the term soft materials came up. So that's my next question. What do you understand by soft materials?
Anything that seems to be the same texture or hardness that of human skin and tissues. That's what we usually mean by softness. Of course, it's a scale. You can, on one hand, you have diamond, which is the hardest material, but on the other end, it's very difficult to give an example of what's the extreme, maybe. So an intuitive an intuitive example is always rubber that I give, similar to say the gummy bear that's soft, and anything that's the similar texture and hardness as human flesh and skin, that's soft.
And in your work, also the term soft robotics comes up. And so I wonder, of course, also about that particular definition.
Frankly, robotics is often used in a kind of stretched way. The kind of machines that we create and the type of functions that we achieve don't really always fall under the category of robots. Therefore, I often prefer to use the term soft actuators or soft machines, which are kind of a subset of the broader term of robots.
One particular kind of robotics in your work are so-called soft robotics. Please, could you also give us an insight into that term?
Sure. So usually when one speaks of robots, humanoid metal man comes to mind, but that's a very stereotypical definition. In reality, robots are of various different kinds. But what is most common in today's world is robots that help in industrial automation. They are big, also metallic robotic arms that work in the factory. So these are great that they're very precise, they're fast, they're strong, but they also have some intrinsic negative points. For example, they're not compatible to work alongside humans. It can be quite dangerous. So that was the primary direction from which the field of soft robotics stemmed, that people wanted to use intrinsically soft materials which were compliant and which could interact with human beings without even in misuse would not harm humans. So yeah, that's how the field of soft robotics started. And now it has, for the past two decades, it has moved into a very fast growing and very exciting field, to be honest.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider leaving us a rating and sharing it with a friend or colleague. It really helps us grow and reach more people interested in science and research. And we truly appreciate it.
Is there any relevance of artificial intelligence in that regard as well?
Yes. I mean, artificial intelligence is a great tool that we have at our disposal now. And researchers are trying various ways to include or use artificial intelligence to design better soft robots, to understand soft robots better, and most importantly, to control the soft robots better. In general, soft robots, the way we describe is it has infinite degrees of freedom because there are no specified links or joints. They can bend at any point. So with these very high number of degrees of freedom, control becomes a very difficult aspect of soft robotics. And I feel artificial intelligence might have a role to play there to improve the controls in this very complex system.
Your work is quite exploratory and focused on discovering what's possible rather than improving existing technologies. However, we live in a time that ask very much for application all the time. So how do you see the relevance of your approach? And that links to what also Max Planck said, I think, and what I quoted at the beginning of our conversation. How do you see your approach, your work, the relevance of your research against the expectations sometimes, also in society, to have applications as fast as possible for something better, higher, quicker, whatever you want?
That's a very relevant question. Definitely the quote from Max Planck is one of my favorite, that insight must precede application. And I think this is a dilemma that most researchers have to balance, to find a nice balance between fundamental and application-driven science. I would like to mention that sometimes the best devices, the best applied devices have come only due to fundamental research. You don't always know what you're looking for until you explore and see what has what you find. There's a definite emphasis on exploratory research. That's what really excites and gets us going. We try to find out what's possible, what new mechanisms we can study, we can develop. But we have kind of reached the stage that we are starting to see that these new strategies, new mechanisms, new machines can have the potential to be applied in a real world situation. For example, I'm part of a research study where we are using soft catheters that can actually go inside MRIs. And we are trying to come up with control mechanisms which uses the MRI itself as a way to guide these catheters. So this was only possible because of the, I would say, years of fundamental research that researchers have initially done, and we were able to build upon that. So it's not a this or that question, but rather how to get both of them moving together, fundamental science and applied application-oriented science.
I like that moving together, and would extend that term perhaps by asking you, where do you find, or where have you found your strongest collaborations with other research centers in your area, in Germany, in the world, here at our university?
I'm quite lucky that University of Stuttgart has a number of collaborative initiatives going on, which allow me to interact and find synergies with other researchers within the university. For example, there's the Stuttgart Center for Simulation Science, the Center for Bionic Intelligence Tubing in Stuttgart. These initiatives are excellent in bringing researchers from diverse fields together and allowing them to find common ground to work on. Outside of the university, I also like to work with researchers around the world. I did my PhD in the US, so that's a big hotspot for soft robotics research. And there are various other researchers around the world as well.
And you are also a faculty member at the Max Planck Research School for Intelligent Systems.
Yes, that's correct. That's a graduate school bringing together students in the broader field of intelligent systems. And yeah, it's a fantastic community where students and faculties get exposed to all different types of research, from robotics to machine learning to haptics to many other fields that I don't really understand.
When students want to do their doctoral thesis, with your guidance, also with colleagues, perhaps, what are some of the criteria for students applying for PhD, for positions, for doctoral studies? I'm asking because I get a lot of emails from students from all over the world, really. And one of them pointed out recently, you know, I've written to, I think the student said 100 professors, but the answers that he received were, the number of answers was very low. And I thought that is disappointing for the person to start with. There must be reasons why that is the case. This is certainly not a question of, you know, not wanting to answer. But in your case, at your institute, would you know how it is handled when students apply for PhD positions, or how do you want to handle it in your research group?
Sure. The first point that comes to mind is that quality is more important over quantity. So it's, I would rather have the applicant apply or really create tailored application packages to 10, 15 professors rather than send the same generic email to 100 professors. That's one of the most common mistakes, if I can say that, that I usually see in the emails that I get, in the applications that I get. For me, generally, for me personally, what I look for is a passion to do research, some experience in the fundamentals of the type of research that they would be doing. I don't expect them to have done exactly the same type of research in their bachelor's or master's. That's asking too much. But they should be at least the same field, and they should be strong in the fundamentals. Some experience in what is research is also helpful, that if you know how to read a scientific article or what it means to really do research and not outside of your curriculum, that's interesting. In general, I am of the opinion that graduate schools where you can apply to instead of directly to professors are also quite helpful. The IMPRS-IS is an example of that. This allows you to choose multiple professors, and it also allows the professors to have access to a pool of talents or applicants. When I was on the other side of the table, when I was an applicant, say, to either a PhD position or even to faculty positions, I always felt that, okay, why aren't the people more responsive? Why do they not let me know at every step what's going on? But now that I am also receiving applications, I can see that in many cases, it's just a matter of time. Professors, maybe contrary to general opinions, are very stressed for time. And it's highly possible that in spite of their best intentions, they just don't find the time to reply to every applicant.
For those who would like to move to Germany and be researchers in Germany, as you yourself came from the US, what advice do you have for them? What should they be aware of? What should they know? What should be first steps so that they can navigate the academic landscape? What were your experiences when navigating the academic landscape here?
Sure. The first thing that comes to mind is that academia in Germany is more decentralized compared to at least the US. So here, the individual institutes and the professors, they make a lot of the decisions, whereas in the US, the decisions were made more at a department or university level. So, in most cases, I think people still do need to apply directly to professors. This concept of graduate schools are not as prevalent as in some other countries, so that's something to keep in mind. And secondly, also important is that things take time. From whatever you need to get done, you should start early on. And there are several steps that goes on that perhaps the applicant is not always aware of, that what's going on behind the scenes. But nonetheless, it takes time, like reviewing applications, preparing for travel documents, preparing work contracts. Everything takes time, and that should be accounted for.
Does take time. And I wonder, you received the Emmy Noether Award. Can you share some of the experiences in that application process as well?
For me, the experience was very positive. I mean, I might be biased because I received the grant, but nevertheless, the experience of the process was also quite positive. Everything went according to how I expected it, in the sense of from how it was described in the website. It's a two-step process that you first need to submit a project proposal, which describes your science, the details of the science that you would want to do, as well as the request for budget, that how you would want to spend the money, and the timeline, and some other details as well. After that, I submitted those. I had to wait maybe 7-8 months while they were sent to external reviewers. And once the reviewers got back, I was invited to a interview by the DFG review board or the Fachkollegium. And that review was also a really positive experience for me. It was very professional. The discussion was based entirely on the science that I had proposed. It was not a very stressful environment, thankfully. And I got an unofficial word call from the DFG the day after the interview saying that, okay, things are looking positive. And then a month later, I got the official offer letter. So from the day of application to when I received the letter, it was around 9 months, which was exactly as it was mentioned in the DFG website.
Thank you for sharing that very detailed description here. And once again, we are very happy to for you and for our university as well that it has worked out in this way. You have mentioned time before, and that brings me to my next question. When did you first realize your interest in what you are doing today in the soft materials, in the particular soft robotics research? Was it only in the US? Was it still in Calcutta, where you come from, suddenly before you came to Stuttgart?
Yes, it was before I came to Stuttgart, but it started during my PhD, and I cannot claim any big reason for that. It just as many aspects of life turn out to be, it was a big coincidence. When I joined my PhD, my advisor was interested in this field, and it was, even though it was not the primary direction of my PhD thesis, I did some work on soft robotics and found it to be very interesting. And then when I completed my PhD and started my postdoc, it was a conscious decision on my part to pivot towards soft robotics and make that my focus. I have enjoyed working in this field. I think it's very interesting, of course, but also there is still a lot to be discovered, a lot to be explored, which is why I like working in soft robotics.
Would you consider yourself a kind of icebreaker in the field of soft robotics? As you said, it's a new field. Did you have to convince a lot of your colleagues, researchers, friends, family of going for this particular area?
Well, yes. Whenever I tell someone that I work in soft robotics, there is always a quizzical eyebrow raised that what does that mean? Is it software? Is it robotics? How do they really go together? But by now, I've kind of used to 30-second elevator pitch on what soft robotics is. I was fortunate to start working in this field at quite early stage of its development, and I got to saw that how the field changed with time, how it progressed, and where it has reached now. And even though I don't mind having to spend an extra 30 seconds at each new conversation describing what soft robotics is.
Well, it certainly didn't take more than 30 seconds here. I read that you hold 2 patents in the area of biofluids and bandage services. Can you share some information about these two, if you want?
Sure, of course. So this was from my PhD work. My PhD thesis was one main focus of my PhD thesis was biosensors, where we developed low-cost, efficient methods of sensing different biological fluids like sweat or blood. And the basis of this research was we used commonly available materials and inexpensive instruments so that the final product would cost only a few cents. And as an alternative to the much expensive biomedical testing equipment and products that are usually commercially available. So with that, we developed these biosensors. One of them was a smart bandage. And essentially what we showed was that if you use this bandage, it would be able to tell whether your wound underneath is doing okay or whether it is developing bacterial infections, essentially track the wound. And yes, that's what the patent is based off of.
With so much research going on in your life, I wonder what else there is time for. You have come to Germany in 2023 or before?
Before I came in late 2020 for my postdoc. I've been in the University of Stuttgart as a junior professor from September 2023.
Yeah, that's where I have the figure from. When you were a Humboldt postdoctoral fellow at the MPI for intelligent systems here. Now, I wonder, have you had any time to travel around Germany as well? From abroad, having lived on two other continents already, what about Germany or beyond?
Sure. No, I actively try to find or make time for traveling around, both within Germany and outside. And it's something that my wife and I really enjoy doing. So I found Germany to be a bit of underrated travel destination. And I'm not sure why, because personally, I have found this there to be a lot of, let's say, hidden gems across. Germany in general is, again, maybe I can say decentralized in this sense as well, so that it's not one big city and then other small towns nearby. There's a lot of population centers spread throughout the country, and that leads to a lot of places to visit, a lot of different difference in culture and difference in history, essentially. So, yeah, I've covered a lot of Germany, and I do have the Deutschland ticket to thank for that a lot. Even within Baden-Württemberg, we have traveled quite a bit. And yeah, I'm very happy to be located in Stuttgart, which is pretty central in the whole of Europe. It's very well connected, and I enjoy living here and traveling nearby and afar.
Traveling far, traveling around, let's travel in time. And perhaps let's try also looking back from the future. If we would meet in 6 years again, at the end of your current Aminöter program and also the grant, what would you be hoping to tell me, to tell us about your research and your experiences here at the University of Stuttgart?
Of course, I would hope that the last 6 years have been a success, let's say, that we did what we set out to do. And not only that, we did beyond that. We discovered new things, new mechanisms, new responses that would be what drives us in our future research. So research is always very dynamic to me, that I don't know what I will be doing in 5 years' time. It's something that kind of organically comes up, and that's the most exciting part. In terms of University of Stuttgart, I see that it's moving ahead as a vibrant environment. And yeah, I can definitely see myself continuing my future career at this university as well. That's something I look forward to.
The final moment in our conversation is always something that we have defined as moment 7. We have collected 7 questions that we would like you to ask and answer. Please make this as shortly as possible.
Okay.
Moment 1. Spätzle or Maultaschen?
Maultaschen.
Moment 2. One thing that you could change about the world would be?
Global warming.
Moment 3. Do you have a recommendation for a book or a movie or some music, a museum visit that you recently made?
Moritz Huis Museum in The Hague.
Moment 4. The best advice you have ever received was?
Don't spread yourself too thin. Do one thing well rather than trying to do many things. Okay.
Moment 5. Your favorite place at the University of Stuttgart is?
The Unisee, the lake right next to the university where you can kind of lie down and enjoy the nice summer weather.
Moment six. Please finish the sentence as well. If I could start all over again, I would do the following differently.
Nothing. Like, my experiences have made me who I am and don't really want to change that.
And moment seven. Please also finish this sentence. Thanks to my studies, I know that.
It's a bit of a cliche, but you can also turn failure into opportunities. And I say that because in my research, I use buckling or mechanical instabilities, which was previously considered a failure mechanism, but now we use that to design new things.
Thank you very much for your time coming here today, but most of all, for having shared some of the very basic attitudes and experiences that you have made in Germany and in Stuttgart and at the University of Stuttgart. Wishing you and your research group all the very best with the Emmy Noether grant in the next 6 years and then whatever comes up as well.
You're very welcome, and thank you as well for having me here and having this delightful conversation and allowing me to express my views on almost everything in the world. I appreciate it. And thank you for organizing this amazing podcast, Made in Science. I think it's a great way to bring more people into what's going on at the University of Stuttgart.
Well, thank you so much for that delightful comment. And to our audience, please stay tuned for our next conversations that are always based on what is made in science. My name is Wolfgang Holtkamp. Have a great podcast day. Goodbye and good talking.